Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Paradoxes are one of the strangest and yet brilliantly powerful forces in existence. When someone starts on any journey, we have expectations of what that journey should be like, what a career should be like, what love should be like. And we have so much that we then fear around that possibly going wrong or differently to what we expect. But inevitably, of course, we learn that what we actually wanted was an illusion. The paradox of real love being imperfect is more beautiful than the Disney-style unicorn and fireworks and fluffy clouds idea of love that is in our heads. And it's strange that in the pursuit of happiness, we often find joy in the unexpected places, and the places that we thought happiness would reside in actually can cause discontent. And I think this is a good reason to pursue some philosophical inquiry delving into the paradoxical nature of our quests for fulfillment. Is true happiness found not in the seeking, but in the unexpected twists of life's journey? Certainly for myself, I was taught and expected that my personal success would come from working in like maths and physics in a real job because I had scholarships and I was cleverer doing that sort of thing. And then later, as I got older, I thought I had to run a real business with lots of employees doing important stuff to be someone who was successful. And now I make a living running a podcast talking about stuff that interests me because of I just enjoy it. And it's funny that I'm now doing something for my work that I still struggle to think of as actually work. And so today we're going to dive into some of the biggest paradoxes of life that I think can help make anyone a little bit wiser, possibly more relaxed, successful, and generally more content and happier. So hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. I am Samuel Webster Harris. Today, of course, diving into the psychology of self-improvement and some of the paradoxes in life that perhaps block us from self-improvement and that once we understand, we can live with more purpose and meaning. So I thought we could start with the advice paradox because if it states that too much advice can be excessive and overwhelming, and often it's effective to apply advice selectively to yourself and towards others. A lot of advice often isn't relevant to us, and it can even be dangerous to use someone else's map of reality to navigate our own reality. And so because of this, instead of giving you the 60 paradoxes of life I'd love to hit you with, I'm controlling myself and I've cut them down to just 16. And of those 16, even some of these might not be relevant to you and perhaps forgotten, but some of them could be really useful. Another paradox around advice is that seeking too much advice can get in the way of taking action. The person who reads 100 self-improvement books a year learns less than the person who reads one book and applies it to their life. This moves perfectly into the next paradox, that more can be less. The more things you have, the less time you have for them. The more computer games you own or the more dresses you have, the less time you can spend enjoying each individual one. Now, those might not sound like such meaningful things, but what about friends? You can't have that many close friends because by nature of it, they can't be close if you aren't spending that much time with that many of them. Or the more projects that you commit to, the less dedicated you will be to make any succeed. And it's much more likely you'll have less success in anything you pursue if you pursue too many things. In fact, Bruce Lee said, "I do not fear the man who has practiced 10,000 different kicks, but the man who has practiced one kick 10,000 times." And that leads us nicely into our next paradox, which is the freedom paradox. Optionality is less freeing than commitment. You know, having the options of all 10,000 kicks is not as useful as the commitment to one. But more importantly from this paradox is the fact that the more you commit to something, the more freedom you'll actually gain. When you commit to disciplines, relationships, or careers, it might feel like a loss of freedom or self-expression. But it's through these commitments that we gain the freedom of mastery. We create deeper connections and more meaningful achievements. The Stoics, of course, said that you must embrace commitments to experience true freedom. As I said recently in the episode about life being a marathon and not a sprint, when we have too much optionality and we're constantly trying to do everything all the time, we never actually sit down and invest in being anywhere or doing anything properly. But before I expand too much on something I've already said, another angle around this is it's just how much easier it can be to be creative once you've made some commitments. Imagine you're trying to write a song and it could be about anything with any instrument, chord structure or topic. That can be very suffocating to start with and actually not freeing at all. But if you're told that you need to use chords G, A, and F, and you have to play it on a ukulele, you have to write lyrics about your first pet in the style of Bob Dylan, you can get going straight away. Right now, you have complete freedom to make a beautiful, meaningful song to you, and you would write a song completely different to the song that I write, and it's still super nice. The point is that once you commit to some constraints, you then have the freedom you need to thrive. And thriving is very much part of the next paradox, which is the growth paradox. Also perhaps known as the overnight success actually takes years paradox. And growth and success basically take a lot longer to arrive than you think, but it will happen shockingly faster than you ever thought possible. Growth and success is very gradual and then sudden. Warren Buffett, one of the richest people on the planet, widely recognized as one of the best investors of all time, with an average 20% compound interest rate of 22%. For 70 years that he's been investing. But that means that 99% of his entire net worth was created after the time that he turned 50. And if he'd given up after 30 years of investing, he wouldn't have most of his wealth. And of course, compound interest is like an obvious example here. But it's the same in relationships. You can't have one call with someone and expect them to be a friend that you trust deeply for life. The best relationships take time and dedication to become the beautiful thing that we can rely on. And there's a threshold where a contact moves from an acquaintance to suddenly being a true friend. And so the best thing is just rely on allowing compounding to work its magic to reach that threshold where it suddenly becomes a proper true success, slowly and then all at once. And now onto the paradox of wisdom. Socrates was, of course, obsessed with questioning yourself to gain wisdom. And Einstein said that the more I learn, the more I realize how much I don't know. And the paradox here is that the wisest people are those who doubt themselves the most. Having wisdom allows you to at least grasp a small idea of the vast complexity of life, along with the awareness of your own limitations to even understand most of it. It allows you to not feel the urge to jump to a conclusion straight away and instead have a calm ability to sit with the idea that you don't always know the answer. Your ego often gets in the way of you being correct. And actually, it might be easier to sit back and say you don't know and let someone else tell you, or even sit with the discomfort of the idea that no one knows what's right. And I think one of the problems for people perhaps in their 20s is that they reach the point where they're told they're an adult and they think they know everything. And yet most of the maturity you then learn for the next 10, 20 years is just slowly realizing how much you don't know and recognizing that all the mistakes you're making are the things that people are telling you you're about to make, and that they actually maybe know more than you about most things. We should embrace our own ignorance, and by doing that, we can then embrace lifelong learning to become actually wise. And this very much leads into the next paradox around intelligence and simplicity. Now, intelligent sounding things can often be an illusion for stupidity. People with high intelligence actually can even feel the urge to overcomplicate simple solutions, which can result in more foolish outcomes. And equally, people who don't actually necessarily understand something really deeply may be unable to explain it simply and effectively because they don't have such a deep understanding as is required. Like, the greatest teachers are able to make a difficult concept very simple. Richard Feynman was obsessed with making things understandable at like a very deep level for people, and he was considered one of the best teachers ever. Andrew Huberman, one of the biggest podcasts at the moment, is really popular because he can make difficult concepts from neuroscience easily understandable for any listener. That's a gift of huge intelligence to make something really simple. But often people will do the opposite. You'll see entrepreneurs or people in sales, they'll try to make something sound really good by making it sound complex, making it sound confusing. So that means it must be impressive and people must want it. Yet actually, if you make your pitch simple and understandable, it's very hard to do that, but it's much more effective. You know, if you tried to make a neuroscience podcast that was just radically complex and difficult, no one would actually listen to it because it would sound like garbage. Whereas if you're Andrew Huberman and you make it simple, people love it. So never try to outsmart other people or outsmart the problem that you're dealing with, because usually you will just outsmart yourself. Okay, onto the persuasion paradox. Something that you realize as you grow up is that argumentative people don't actually persuade anyone of their beliefs. Telling people that they are wrong doesn't get you anywhere. Persuasive people don't argue, they do the opposite. They observe, they listen, and they'll probably ask thoughtful questions that show understanding and empathy to that person's situation. And that can create introspection in the other party, which will actually lead them to think about what they may be doing wrong. A therapist will never tell people what to think. They won't tell people what to feel. That would be judgmental. A therapist will ask questions to help the person understand their own assumptions, examine their own biases, and become a better judge of their own actions. So we must argue much less and try and persuade much more. It's said that persuasion is an art that requires a paintbrush, not a sledgehammer. And the Stoics, of course, believed in the general talking paradox that effective communication involved listening more than speaking, and that you have two ears and one mouth, and you should use them with that ratio. This very much leads into my next paradox, which is possibly my favorite one, which is that insecurity screams and confidence whispers. When I heard this, I just couldn't get it out of my head. So this was one of the paradoxes that stood out for me. I heard it from Nat Eliason, who's a brilliant writer, and it basically states that the more insecure a belief someone has, the more they will go out of their way to try and convince you of it, and perhaps even convince themselves about it. Yet the more confident someone is, the less they care about trying to prove it to others, because they just hold that quiet confidence in themselves. It doesn't actually matter to them so much what other people think. And just look at like scammers, for example, like the Centricard crypto scam, or Sam Bankman-Fried of FTX, or Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos. These people went out of their way to show how great they were, and they'd start conversations saying that they weren't running a scam. They'd talk about their amazing IQ or their brilliant education. You compare this to Einstein, who was just interested in solving problems, or the genius Stephen Hawking, who actually said the quote that people who show off about their IQ are losers. And I think when it comes to developing confidence, it's best put by Alex Hormozy, who says the best way to build confidence is to have an indisputable stack of evidence that you are who you say you are. So just start doing things and stop talking about it. Don't try to convince anyone of anything. Instead, just start creating evidence that you are who you want to be by being the person who you want to be. And it's important not to put that off because of the next paradox, which states that life only gets more complex, not simpler. And humans have this tendency to expect everything to get like slightly easier. You know, next week we'll have more time for this thing, and then next month we'll like have way more freedom because we haven't got plans there. And by next year, like, we can just start all these new hellbees and whatever it is that we're not, and see all these people that we haven't got time to see this year because of next year, that'll be easy. And yet, actually, it's the opposite. All these things we don't have time to do right now, we're never going to have time to do in the future. And you definitely shouldn't expect yourself to. So in terms of the last piece of advice around being the person you want to be, you actually need to make some sacrifices and just work out exactly what you can do that's manageable. And besides thinking about your week, month, or year, you can even look at the decade level. And I'm sure you can remember when you were a child, you had so much time to play and to be creative. And yet, we feel like once we're an adult, we'll have way more time once we have school in the way and we're responsible for all our own things and people aren't telling us what to do. But then we start to get a bit more adult. We become like a student at college and we can't wait for university to be over. We can go and do all of our things that we're putting off when we have more time and money. And then we get to our 20s and we're just in this like hectic rush to prove ourselves in our job, in our social lives, our relationships. So we just feel we have to like sort all this stuff out right now, and it will all calm down in our 30s when we're married and we're just like living somewhere reliable, etc. And then in our 30s, we're trying to balance a career with children, marriages, mortgages, and so on, and just gets more complex and more things eating away at our time. Time is the thing that gets stretched further and further as you get older. So instead of planning for things to get easier, plan for them to get harder. And then things that you do want to do might actually start getting done. And now a quick pause for a breather whilst we discuss some of my wonderful advertisers that keep the show running. On the subject of getting things done, let's talk about the productivity paradox. The longer you work, the less you get done. As Parkinson's law famously states, work expands to fill the time allotted for its completion. The more time you allow, the longer you have to not make the hard decisions. When you establish a long amount of hours to do your work, you can find very unproductive ways to fill it. Instead, you should try and work like a lion. Sprint, rest, and then repeat. I think this is true for absolutely anyone, but entrepreneurs, creators, people who have just left uni, they can find this even harder. Now, I'm a nomad creator who doesn't have a boss. My partner is a designer. We both love working as well. We like doing what we do. And we could easily work every evening and into the weekends, but that actually ends up making us less productive without having a proper closure of time off or a real weekend to enjoy. So we've actually decided to shut off periods like evenings, I know, shock horror, and weekends. We actually take weekends, and we're even trying to sometimes take a half day off on a Wednesday afternoon, and it feels a bit like when you're at school, and it makes the week more interesting and more exciting, and you can just work much harder in the times you're meant to be working with more focus. Now, sure, it can be very productive to sometimes dig down for a weekend and do a proper workathon, or perhaps one late night do a big work session for like a milestone or a sprint or something. And if you keep these as very rare specific occasions, it can be a good chance to flex your muscles and your creative powers, and it can feel really productive in that moment. And that's because you haven't done it for a long time. But if you fall into the allure of working more weekends and most evenings, you end up becoming much less productive because it's no longer special, it's monotonous. Of course, we all have individual different cadences, and you'll probably need to work out what works best for you. But mainly the concept that working like a lion, sprinting, resting, repeating is really good. Now onto the concept that stress isn't stressful and you actually need it. And there are a bunch of paradoxes around this concept that stress in your life is really useful. The first one is the boredom paradox. These days, because we have this attraction to always be on and doing things, we fear boredom like the plague. We scramble to fill every single moment so that our brain is always got some form of distraction or feels like it's doing something useful. Whether you're in a queue or on the toilet or taking a walk, we can't sit with just our thoughts, and we need to be plugged into our headphones or social media just to feel like we're at least doing something. And yet, the most creative, the most captivating ideas, they'll stem directly from periods of intense boredom. When you're bored, your mind wanders, your thoughts mingle, and creative ideas can strike. Boredom sparks creativity, so you should schedule more of it into your weeks instead of avoiding it. Then we have the paradox that harder things make your life easier. Because when things are too easy, we lose our strength. Since we've had GPS navigation on our phones, many people don't know how to navigate. My generation and younger were brought up being able to text anyone, and now we're all afraid to make a phone call. If you use ChatGPT for all your ideas and work, you'll lose your creativity and ability to do stuff. I've been using Duolingo to learn a language, but it's too easy. I never actually have to like sit in front of a real person and panic at the fact that I'm not finding the words to speak. And thus, I can't actually find any words to speak when I try and talk to a person. You need to do something that's actually painful and hard for it to make you better at it. So choosing the comfort of doing the easy things will not make you better. And it's pretty obvious for your health. You have to work your muscle hard for it to get harder. You have to do unpleasant things like running to get fitter, etc. And another paradox here is that avoiding unpleasant things doesn't lead to such pleasant memories. When I had Alistair Humphreys on the podcast, he's a brilliant author and adventurer who cycled around the world. He has really good advice around what makes a good adventure, and that is just to make it as cheap as possible, to go somewhere that's as cold or hot as you can make, as you can allow it, and do the adventure for as long as you can, such as cycling around the world, etc. And instead of paying to avoid all the unpleasant things that we fear, the adventure lies in battling them. We create memorable adventures. If the things we want are memorable adventures, that's created by doing hard, scary, difficult things. But if you make everything too easy, it's not really an adventure, it's just a holiday. And then, of course, the paradox of failure. The more you fail, the more likely you are to succeed. Each failure will provide valuable lessons that pave the way to your future successes. This is the foundation of the growth mindset and, of course, the stoic embracing of failure as part of the journey. So don't fear things going wrong when it means you're actually learning. And so on the subject of running away from our fears, we have the control paradox. The more you try to control everything, the less control you actually have. Imagine you try to completely control your partner. They will leave, and now you have no partner at all. If you need everything to go perfectly right for your project or your life plan, when one thing goes wrong, the entire plan is ruined. You have to let go and allow for things to happen naturally with their own quirks and differences, and that often leads to better outcomes and much less stress. Only by relinquishing control, accepting imperfection, can you actually start to gain some control for yourself and of yourself. Right, almost at the end, the happiness paradox, very much related to the control paradox. Now, we all know that happiness is ultimately the reason why we do most things. We're doing them because at least we think it will make us happy. Yet, seeking happiness directly often makes happiness elusive as we try to chase it harder and harder. If we set a bunch of goals to check off that will create happiness, it is the antithesis of actually being happy. A desire is a contract with yourself to be unhappy until you achieve that thing. Real happiness arrives when you immerse yourself in meaningful activities and relationships, not when you're ticking off a checklist of requirements for happiness. And so it's when we stop chasing happiness that it's able to find us. And there's a similar paradox in life just around seeking in general. Often when we stop looking for things, we're able to find the thing we're looking for. You know, when you stop searching for your lost sunglasses, they can just turn up the next day where you don't expect them. But besides sunglasses, it can also happen in even more profound things. When we're actively searching for love, for example, that usually means we're not settling. You can't accept the things that come up when you're in the mode of searching and seeking if you're not in the mode of finding and appreciating. And I also think that you just get a lot more sexy when you lose your neediness and relax into just being yourself. You don't look for someone else to complete you. When you're able to meet someone and just hang out with them because it's fun and bring them into your life instead of screening people through an app and then meeting them with a checklist of your needs whilst also trying to impress them, it's just really not cool at all and not sexy. So when you stop seeking things, it can arrive more naturally and be a lot more meaningful and enjoyable. And now, finally, the death paradox. You have to know and accept your death to truly live your life. Memento mori, of course, is the Stoic rule, and it's the reminder of the certainty and inescapability of death. It's, of course, not meant to be morbid. It's here to just clarify our thoughts around life and inspire us to be more risky, to behave more audaciously, and just illuminate the way we think about things. When we accept that our time is finite, we are able to appreciate its truly precious nature and make the most of our time. Of course, living in fear of dying is the opposite at that point. But appreciating the ephemeral nature of everything, savoring each moment for its own uniqueness, helps you to not be caught up in the feelings of despair that might come sometimes, and it can allow us to move through our short time in the universe with greater appreciation for that time we have and make the most of it. And so we have arrived at the end of the podcast. If you have enjoyed the show, then it would be lovely if you hit me with a comment on Spotify or YouTube. Good ratings will help me carry on growing the podcast. That would be super appreciated. I'm sure you've heard that a trillion times if you listen to podcasts like me. But hey, life is short. You've made it through that moment. It was a unique moment in time that will be replicated thousands of times. But more importantly, remember that desire is a contract with yourself to be unhappy until you achieve it. And remember that life is short, and so you may as well enjoy right now in the moment instead of waiting for a future time where, of course, we have learned that things only get busier and we have less time. So stop planning to have happiness some point in like a year's time when that's clearly never going to happen. Be kind to yourself this week and today, and whilst you're at it, be kind to someone else too.